Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
Blue Wire.
Welcome to the Lottery Podcast on Blue Wire Network. I'm John Wasserman, lead NBA draft writer for Bleacher Report. This week's episode is brought to you by Bet Online, and I'm joined by SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell, who has to be in some kind of good mood today with the news breaking about the Chicago Bulls' change in leadership. They've now hired former Nuggets GM Arturis Kanyashovas to take over, reshape the front office, which was obviously in need of a shakeup. You feeling good today, Ricky?
I am. I'm feeling good. I would feel better if they actually fired John Paxson and Gar Foreman. Both of those guys are going to remain within the organization in some capacity. Paxson seems like he's going to be an advisor to Kanyashovas. I'll give Kanyashovas some advice right off the bat. Don't listen to Paxson, because the Bulls badly needed to give this front office a facelift. Paxson had been in charge for 17 years. This move is long overdue for the Bulls. It is being celebrated by Bulls fans like a seventh championship. I do think it is certainly a cause for celebration, but I just hope that Kanyashovas is going to have full autonomy, going to be able to run the show how he wants to. All reports point to that, so as long as that's the case, it's a very exciting day for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, Kanyashovas, he's not like a guy who's been on TV a lot, and you know, most people don't really know him in terms of personality. He's really well respected. Anytime you ask anybody about him, they always say, you know, great choice. He was kind of, you know, built for this type of role. Was there anybody else you had in mind that you were hoping Chicago would at least consider?
All I wanted the Bulls to do was to look at the winning franchises around the league and try to identify someone in a rival front office that they could pluck. And, you know, I think that some fans had delusions of getting someone like Masai Ujiri or Sam Presti. The Bulls were never going to pay up for an executive of that caliber. I think that, as always with the Bulls, cost is going to be a major factor, and you know, I think Kanyashovas, they did the right process to lead them to get there. They should have hired more minority candidates before they eventually pulled the trigger on him, but besides for that black mark, I think that the Bulls did the right thing in terms of looking to winning franchises and trying to pluck an executive. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, he's got a pretty strong presence. He's kind of like you know, he's like the Bond villain type of guy, but he seems easy to talk to, and again, everyone seems to like him, both in terms of the job he's done, and as a human being in general. So what's the plan now? Now he's going to hire like a new GM?
Yeah, that was the most recent report from Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo Sports. He plans to hire a new GM. The Bulls have always had one of the smallest staffs in the NBA in terms of scouting, in terms of analytics, and even the coaching staff. The Bulls still have never had a shooting coach to work with the team. So this is going to have to be a major investment from the Reinsdorfs, the family that owns the Bulls. It can't just be Kanyashovas. As long as he has the financial freedom to hire the people he wants to hire, I think it could be a very good thing for the Bulls.
Yeah, he's got some scouting experience internationally, so I think that's always a good thing to have a guy with that type of background going into a draft where the Bulls are projected to pick seventh again. But before we get into draft talk, you know, every time I do a mock draft or I'm looking at Chicago and trying to figure out, you know, what do they need, what type of player is going to elevate the rest of the group, you look at the roster, obviously there's good players on the roster, and it hasn't really translated to wins. What's the first move? What should he be looking to do with the guys on the team? Is there any obvious type of trade, somebody they should dangle, and the type of player they should be looking to get in return?
Yeah, in terms of the Bulls draft evaluation, I got to say best player available all day. That would have been the case even without a new front office, but especially with Kanyashovas coming in. I think that, you know, everyone that's on the team right now, while they do have some intriguing young prospects in Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, Kobe White, even Zach LaVine, still a young player, there needs to be a fresh set of eyes on these guys and a fresh evaluation, and they can't be beholden to the old biases of how they came to town. I trust Karnišovas to make a good evaluation. In terms of what I think, it's going to be some difficult decisions because the Bulls do have some promising young players. They haven't led the team to many wins, as you noted. So I think some hard choices are going to have to be made. You know, you have Lauri Markkanen's extension looming. Lauri Markkanen has not gotten better in any of his three NBA seasons. Is he someone you really want to give a $90 million contract to? I think that if he has league-wide value, that's someone they could potentially dangle. What to do with Kobe White and Zach LaVine? Kobe White does not really look like a pure point guard by any means. More of an off-ball scorer. LaVine is a similar role. Are those two on the court tenable together defensively? So I think there's some hard choices to be made. I would not be surprised if Karnišovas ends up flipping the majority of the roster within a year. And quite frankly, the Bulls don't have much to lose, even though they have some exciting young pieces. It's been such a bad stretch of recent years for the Bulls that even if they do tear it down, it's not like you're really missing much.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble I have is really kind of assessing everyone's individual value. Kind of like you mentioned, like, Lauri Markkanen, he hasn't gotten better in 3 years, but there are some people, you know, I live in New York, and the Knicks are looking for some type of change, some new exciting addition, and Markkanen keeps coming up. And, like, there's one group of people who think, you know, oh, you can really buy low on him, and he's a potential all-star. And then you mentioned Chicago. He hasn't gotten better in 3 years. So, like, what's the viewpoint? What's the what does everybody think of Markkanen? Do they still have hopes that, like, he can be a star-caliber Porzingis type of scorer, or has the allure to him kind of faded?
I think it's a little of both. It's tough because coming into this past season, which was his third year in the league, I thought he had more pressure on him than any player on the roster, especially with the extension looming, that he really had to assert himself as a top flight NBA scorer, a guy who could get you 20 a game, and at least, like, you know, stake his claim as a future offensive focal point of the team. Well, that didn't happen at all. He turned in what was probably the worst season of his career. I think it comes with a major caveat that Jim Boylan is so awful, and Karnišovas has a very easy first test to pass as the Bulls' new leading man. Fire Jim Boylan right away. If Jim Boylan is the coach next year, I think that that's going to be a huge strike against Karnišovas. I do expect him to fire Boylan, who has just been a disaster, and I think that Boylan deserves a lot of the blame for Markkanen sort of failing to develop. So in terms of Markkanen, I mean, I'm not very high on him right now for a couple different reasons. The first is that he hasn't improved. The second is that he's averaging under one steal and under one block per 36 minutes for his career. He doesn't make an impact on the boards. He doesn't make an impact defensively. Basically, the path for Markkanen to be a really good player is to average an efficient 25 points a game or somewhere in that range. He just doesn't bring enough else to the table. And to this point, we haven't really seen him consistently show that type of scoring ability. So while he still has some intriguing tools, and I still think he has some potential, Markkanen's big thing to me is he needs a high-level creator setting him up. I believe like 70% of Markkanen's baskets were assisted over the last 2 years. That's just way too high of a number for someone like the Bulls who lacked a lead offensive initiator. If you put Markkanen with a powerful creator like James Harden, like Luka Doncic, I think you could see his value skyrocket when he has someone spoon-feeding him quality offensive opportunities. That hasn't happened with the Bulls, who haven't had strong point guard play, who have miscast Zach LaVine as their lead initiator in recent years. So not a lost cause by any means, Lauri Markkanen, but he could probably use a change of scenery.
Yeah, all right, so let's just, I mean, you kind of created a nice segue into the draft and the options that the Bulls are going to be looking for. And you put out a recent article on LaMelo Ball as your number one overall prospect. I've had him number one as well since his last game in Australia, since November. I just feel super confident in both his floor and his ceiling. And of course, like you mentioned, the Bulls have kind of needed a setup guy, a guy to put other guys in position to have better scoring opportunities, more efficient offense overall. And so you got to imagine Chicago is looking at Ball. And the questions I continue to get from Bulls fans is, can Ball coexist with a guy like Zach LaVine? They both kind of need the rock. Although, you know, LaVine is more of a combo. What do you think about LaMelo's fit if Chicago does indeed keep Zach LaVine?
Love it. Obvious pick. If you get the number one overall choice, you're the Bulls. I think you would have to take LaMelo Ball. I think he'd be a good fit with LaVine because LaVine really should not be running pick and rolls in isolations, right? The only reason that's happening is because Chicago doesn't have another strong offensive initiator type. That burden falls to LaVine. I personally would love to see LaVine in more of an off-ball role a la Klay Thompson, where he's running off screens, can use his shooting ability to stretch out defenses, can attack a closeout with his great athleticism. Everyone focuses on LaVine's defense as his biggest shortcoming, but to me, his lack of feel for the game offensively might be just as damaging. There have been a lot of great players in the NBA, Trae Young, Steve Nash, who couldn't really defend. If LaVine had that level of basketball IQ, he'd be an unstoppable offensive player. Instead, the guy's a lights-out scorer who still doesn't really rate highly in terms of an overall offensive player because his decision-making is kind of poor. So I think having a brilliant lead initiator, brilliant passer facilitator like LaMelo Ball would be the best thing that could ever happen to Zach LaVine. Now, there's going to be a steep learning curve with LaMelo Ball. I do have him number one. I'm not totally convinced his floor is maybe as high as you think it is. I do think it's a risky pick. I think that, you know, early in his career, he's going to be targeted defensively from opposing teams. He is going to really have to prove that he can play within a team construct and that he can gain the respect of veterans. But I have number one because I think his talent demands that he's number one, especially within this draft class. He plays with sort of like a street ball style and street ball sizzle that I think came from his backyard battles with his two older brothers growing up in California. And I love everything about LaMelo's long-term potential, but, you know, he still isn't 19 years old yet. It is going to be a slow burn, I think, for him to sort of grow into the player that I think he can eventually be down the line. I believe LaMelo has higher upside ultimately than Lonzo, even though I was very high on Lonzo coming into the draft in 17. But Lonzo was a little bit older. He might have been a little bit more mature and battle-tested. So I think it could be a slow process for LaMelo to realize the extent of his full ceiling. But if and when it happens, LaMelo Ball is quite frankly the most talented player in this draft class, and I don't really think anyone else can measure up to him.
I actually think going to Chicago would be a good thing for LaMelo. I mean, you mentioned kind of the street ball flair, and I think if there's a knock on LaMelo, it's that he gets carried away with, you know, the dribble, 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 pull up, and the hero shots. And, you know, you go to a team like Chicago, he could put some scores around him. He wouldn't even really have that opportunity to dance with it too much with LaVine and Markkanen and Wendell Carter expecting more touches and shots next year. And he could really just play to his strengths as a playmaker, just move the ball. So I don't know. I think he'd also have a obvious opportunity to start there at point guard, and Kobe White honestly is like screaming six man microwave type score. I kind of like the way it would mesh. Now obviously you're going to need a top pick to get LaMelo, and then we look at some of the other options for them at point guard. Another really good passer is Killian Hayes, who I have ranked, you know, roughly top five in this draft. And curious, have you seen a lot of Killian Hayes? Have you been doing your research on him?
Yeah, I really like Killian Hayes. I've been covering the draft for SB Nation since 2014, but this year I've had more responsibilities covering the NBA in general. So I am planning on doing a little bit more of a deep dive into all these guys. What I've seen so far out of Killian Hayes, I've really liked. I remember watching the FIBA tournament when he was playing for France with Meldon and, you know, that great French team that beat, or they didn't beat John Calipari's, or they didn't beat the USA team, but they got to the gold medal game. They lost. I think they took silver. France did in that tournament. So Killian Hayes has been on my radar for a while. I think he showed a lot of progress with Ulm this year. Obviously, he has great size at 6'5". The knock on him is his lack of explosive athleticism going to the basket, but I think he showed some improvement as an athlete this year. I think that his pull-up shooting ability made serious strides, and Killian Hayes is a guy for the Bulls who I would target at number 7 overall. If they don't have a shot at LaMelo, I don't know if he'll still be there. I think that maybe armchair scouts on the internet who view the NBA draft might be higher on Killian Hayes than the mainstream is and than NBA GMs are. We'll see how that plays out as the draft comes closer to happening, but Killian Hayes is someone who's very high on my personal big board and who I think would be a great fit in Chicago if he's still available.
Yeah, I mentioned Hayes as the second guy behind LaMelo only because what we were talking about before, Chicago kind of needs a point guard who can get others involved. And I think that's really Hayes' bread and butter. And one of the reasons why he's moved up boards this year or at least has, you know, as you said, the armchair scouts on the internet have really taken a liking to him, is because he's really improved his personal shot creation, his shot making. Hit 14 threes a year ago, and this year he doubled that, and he's taken baby steps here with the shot making. But, you know, he's become a guy who can get his own shot. He's got one of the best floaters in the game. He shoots like 85% from the free throw line. Just all promising signs for his offensive scoring trajectory. But again, worst case, he's such a good passer, particularly in the pick and roll game, that you've got to imagine he'd interest Chicago. And of course, now with Arturis running the show, I'm sure he's got some type of feel and an interest in the international players. And then another guy who's in the same category, we'll stick to the passers, is Tyrese Haliburton, who, you know, he reminds me a lot of Lonzo Ball, and I'm kind of having that same thought process going into the draft with him, that, you know, if all else fails, you know that you have a phenomenal passer and decision maker. Do you think he should be a serious option for Chicago at number seven also?
I don't have a super strong read on Haliburton, or a super strong opinion, I should say. I've watched a ton of him. And it kills me to say this because, you know, when in doubt, you go to the numbers, I think. And Halliburton's numbers through his 2 years at Iowa State were totally unassailable. The fact that he was able to increase his usage so much as a sophomore and still maintain being one of the most efficient players in college basketball is phenomenal. But from an eye test perspective, like, I wonder how much of a threat he's going to be attacking the basket, how much of a threat he's going to be to pull up off the dribble. I think those are major question marks. I would prefer someone like Tyrese Maxey to Haliburton, even though Maxey might be more of, you know, he's not as much of a pure facilitator. He's a little bit more of a combo, maybe, even though he's shorter than Haliburton. Haliburton is interesting. I definitely think he has some holes in his game. I don't know if he's quite the savant that Lonzo was coming out of UCLA, so I would have him a little bit lower on my personal list. But, you know, Bulls need a point guard, and he checks a lot of those boxes, so I would expect him to be one of the players they closely evaluate.
Yeah, you know, with Maxey, to me, Maxey reminds me too much of a Kobe White type who, you know, you don't want to rely on him to be your lead decision maker. But I do like Maxey. I'm high on him. He's top 10 for me. I'm ignoring his shooting percentages. He's tough. He's a good locker room guy. Everybody seems to like him. Just brings a lot of positive energy. I think he's a safe bet, honestly, anywhere outside the top three for any team. Based on his fit. But Haliburton to me is a guy, so I've always questioned Hallie. He's just a weird player. He's weird looking in terms of his posture. He's not really explosive. He's got one of the weirdest looking jump shots you've ever seen. Doesn't shoot it well off the dribble. But like you said, the numbers, he kind of checks all the boxes. He fills up box scores. Just another guy I feel really safe about in a draft where there's a lot of uncertainty. So as I've gotten back after the season and watched more tape, I've actually kind of talked myself into Haliburton. Particularly, I just watched the Alabama game against Lewis Jr., and it was like one of the best performances I've seen from anybody. And when the shot's falling, he's just a very complete player and high IQ guy. I continue to say, just like a really low-risk type of guy who I think fills a need for Chicago. And also the idea of Hallie, the more I watch him, the more I think he could play some two-guard. He ranked in the 99th percentile in spot-ups this year. I can imagine him going to Golden State, being an off-ball guy who just kind of takes what the defense gives him, makes the right decisions as a passer, makes the open shot, really good instincts defensively, just a, you know, a Malcolm Brogdon type role player who can fit in. And so anyway, personally, I've kind of changed course with my thinking on Haliburton, and he continues to move up for me. So also in Chicago, another thing, right? Wendell Carter, we all loved him coming into the draft. He's had two injury plague seasons. If some of these guards are off the board and there's a guy like, you know, James Wiseman or Okongwu there, would you hesitate to take a big guy like that just because you really want to get Carter on the floor?
Well, the thing is, like, what's Karnišovas going to do? Like, I love Wendell Carter. I think Wendell Carter has been horribly mismanaged by Jim Boylan over the last 2 years, and that if I had to choose one guy to protect on the Bulls right now, I would choose Carter. I really still believe in his full potential. But at the end of the day, like, Carter isn't that special where you're going to, like, build the whole franchise around him. So, you know, if you want Okongwu, I think Okongwu, to me, if you had to have me bet who's the safest bet to just be a good player in this draft, I would take Okongwu. I think that his skill set is not exactly what the Bulls need. But I mean, if you move Wendell Carter for a guard or more assets, then you could have an opportunity for him. So I really like Okongwu. I've been watching James Wiseman for 3 or 4 years covering the AAU scene for SB Nation. James Wiseman wasn't even chosen for one of the top three all EYBL teams when he was ranked as the number one player in the country. I always thought that was very damning. I'm not particularly high on him. I do think he's a lottery caliber prospect, but I would not want the Bulls to take him, just because I think that his game is pretty limited in terms of what you want out of a modern center. So Okongwu is interesting. I think the only way that happens is if you trade Carter. While I do think Carter is pretty promising long term, I mean, it's the Karnišovas show at this point, right? If he wants to trade him, I'll trust him. And I hope he's able to get a good return back, because I do still think that Wendell can be a pretty good player in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a pretty good assessment of Okongwu. Like, he's a lock to be a good NBA player. The question is, in today's league, can he be a star-type player as mostly a post guy who's not going to stretch the floor? And really, he's a 6'9 center, but plays hard, you know, big-time shot blocker, a lot of energy, athleticism. I think he's more skilled than he's given credit for. And I know the NBA has gone away from post-ups, but he's pretty sharp down there. He's got some slick moves, both facing up and back to the basket. I have him top five, again, just because I'm one of those guys I just feel, like you said, super confident is going to be a good player. And I'm valuing safety and low risk in this particular draft. And Wiseman, I get a lot of shit for giving shit to Wiseman, because, you know, obviously he's physically super impressive with the 7'1", 240, 7'6 wingspan. He could jump. But in today's NBA, I mean, he doesn't shoot. He doesn't pass. I'm not really sold on his defensive impact. Sure, he's going to put up shot blocking numbers, but I don't think he's going to be like a game-changing defensive anchor. And so I have him ranked number 10. I think that's kind of what you were saying, as a lottery prospect, but not a franchise guy to build around.
And you know, the Memphis fans especially, have given me blown back for ranking Wiseman like 8. Mm-hmm. And you said you had him 10. Yeah. To be honest, we're being like positive in my view. Like, I could drop him to like 18 or 19 and feel fine with it. Yep. So even elevating him to 8, 9, 10, I know there's blowback. I've watched a lot of James Wiseman over the years in person. And I do think that he will have a long NBA career. There's no doubt about that. I just don't really see the super high ceiling that I think some scouts at the high school level initially saw. So, yeah.
Right. Like, so the Warriors, you know, because we're doing these mock drafts and they had the worst record, we're projecting them to pick number one. And there's a lot of people saying, okay, they need a center. They don't need another wing or guard. And Wiseman's right there. But, you know, you can, if he goes to a team like the Warriors, like, they can just pay Willie Cauley-Stein to do exactly the same thing, which is run the floor, dunk, you know, block shots, and just catch and finish. So I don't really, like you said, I don't really see the upside. You've watched him in AAU, so have I. I've seen him in high school. You know, he tries to pull off some skill moves with his post game and some, you know, silly step back shots he likes to show that he can make, but I just can't see any of those skills really translating, or an offense saying, okay, let's give the ball to Wiseman in the half court. I think that's our best option for a higher percentage shot, is to give it to Wiseman and watch him go to work. I mean, you've seen him since he was, you know, mid-teens. Are you buying any of these skills translating from the touch to the post game, to the face up? Like, you know, what do you see there? What do you think his trajectory is in terms of scoring?
No, like you said, like, if you're giving the ball to James Wiseman on the block, that's not just not going to be an efficient offensive possession in the NBA. To me, he's another guy who sort of needs to be spoon-fed. And if he gets with a high-level creator, I do think he's definitely got potential as like a pick-and-dive guy who can finish at the rim. DeAndre Jordan is a name who comes up as a comparison for him. He's not on the level athletically as prime DeAndre Jordan, in my opinion, but at least the measurements are similar. He is absolutely gigantic. I think he'll interview well, too. Every time I've talked to him, he's been cool guy. So, yeah, I just think that, you know, he's more of a role player than a star, and he could very well have a great career in the NBA, very solid career, make lots of money. But I just don't see him being anything more than like a fifth option, probably offensively. And then defensively, I don't see him being like Rudy Gobert or someone who's like a game-changing defender. I think he'll be solid. There'll be a learning curve. There'll be matchups where he gets played off the floor even. But He's a good prospect, not a great prospect, and a lot of his hype comes from his high school evaluation more than his translation into the modern NBA, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. Before we move on, I got a shout out to Bet Online. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on, but you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack to bringing Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Open all 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online wagering solution. Okay, another guy we haven't really addressed, and we have to because he's just like the main focus of the draft conversation, is Anthony Edwards. I had him number one coming into the season. I don't have him number one now. I still have him in that top tier, but everything inside of me says to stay away from him in the draft. I actually compare him to Zach LaVine as that type of guy. And when I say stay away from him, I mean like with a top three pick. I do think he's going to go top three, and I totally understand why a team would take him top three, even number one. I see, again, why they could just see a guaranteed score in the NBA. But what's your take on Anthony Edwards overall and how he stacks up with the other guys in this draft?
Yeah, I had him number one until like 2 weeks ago, to be honest. And now I have him number two. I have been following his career pretty closely. I did a big feature on him when he reclassified. That was in January of 2019, I believe. I talked to him on the phone and a few of his high school coaches. Really seems like a great kid from the small view into his personality that I got. He is also very young, just like LaMelo Ball, one of the youngest American-born prospects in this class. I'm willing to bet on Anthony Edwards for a few of the reasons you laid out. I think that while the LaVine comparison is intriguing because of the athleticism and the shot making, I think that Anthony Edwards could probably like bench press Zach LaVine right now. Anthony Edwards is just so much more cut than someone like LaVine, who's very thin. I think that Edwards at its strength will help him defensively. To me, it's more of like a play recognition thing with him, which I don't know if you can fix that, quite frankly, moving forward. But when Edwards was dialed in defensively, I'm calling back to the Maui Invitational game against Michigan State, where in the second half of that game, his defensive highlights were as impressive as his offensive highlights. He dropped like 30 points in the second half of that game. So I would still be willing to take a bet on Edwards. I would want a high-level creator next to him. I would want a patient infrastructure and a strong head coach who can sort of ease his transition to the NBA because he is going to be so young. Because I don't think that like he's ready to be running isolations and pick and rolls in the league. But if you put him in a more defined role, if you let his development be a slow burn, and if you really focus on coaching him to the best parts of his game, which is putting pressure on the rim, using his physicality to bully less gifted players, I still have him number two. I know he only shot 40% from the field. I believe in his shot making. I believe in his shooting touch. He hit some very difficult shots, which I think is another way the LaVine comparison comes into play. I think in a more defined role, he can be really good.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned he could bench press LaVine, but the way he plays, he's 225. He might as well be 200 because he just doesn't really use his body. He loves the hero jumper game, and that's my biggest concern with him. And I know he can make him. But he really, really prefers to make a jump shot than a layup or a free throw. You mentioned his defense. Well, for him to be locked in defensively, he's got to be great offensively. And if he stinks on offense or his team's losing, you could like totally see his defensive intensity just drop. And one of my knocks on him, and I've never interviewed him personally, but I've been around him and I've seen a million interviews, and I study his body language closely. I don't think he's super professional, and I don't mean that in a mean way. He's still 18 years old, but I feel like he just doesn't take it very seriously, and he's very concerned with how he looks and the types of, the sexiness to his shots over substance. And I just have concerns about his, how he's going to handle himself going forward as a pro. But there's no question he's going to be a productive NBA two guard and a guy who can get his shot and make any shot in the book and catch fire and have 40-point games. When the offense runs through him, your offense as a whole can really suffer. A lot of guys will stand around and watch. And, you know, of course, we saw that 32-point second-half explosion against Michigan State. Well, I just went back and watched the Auburn game yesterday where his team got blown out by 20. And, I mean, he would literally – there was one possession where he dribbled for 15 straight seconds and took a pull-up jumper while the four other guys – two guys stood in the wing, two other guys stood in the corner and just watched, and he jogged back on defense. And, I don't know, just to think of him as, you know, my top option, which is, I guess, if you're drafting him, if you're a bad team drafting, that's what you're expecting him to be. I would just – like, you know, as somebody who lives in New York, I really don't want the Knicks to draft Anthony Edwards. I think it's a recipe for disaster. However, you put him on the team like the Warriors, where he doesn't have that opportunity to dance with the ball again. You know, kind of like I said with LaMelo, I think the fit with him is going to be so crucial to his development and early on. You know, is there a team that stands out to you that, you know, to get the max out of Edwards? What team do you think needs to draft him?
Yeah, I do think a team like the Warriors would be really interesting. How about the Hawks? I mean, obviously, he's an Atlanta kid. Being able to play with Trae Young, he could spoon feed him some offensive opportunities. I think that could be interesting. A team like the Spurs would be great for him, I think. Maybe even a team like the Hornets could be kind of interesting. So who knows what will happen with Edwards. The one thing I'll say is talking to him last year, we sat down for maybe about 30 minutes, and then watching the video he did with Mike Schmitz of ESPN going over his own highlights and lowlights, I do think he has a little bit more self-awareness than his game shows. And he is just so young, too, mm-hmm. is the other thing to remember with him. Like, if he was starting college next year, I would think he'd be a little more efficient. But like you said, he already has the physical tools. The issue with him is more of a mindset thing. I agree it'd be a disaster on the Knicks, him and RJ together, no one else would see the ball. So I don't know. I want to bet on Edwards because I think he has some things you can't teach. And I think that his approach maybe isn't as poor as his play might indicate it is, given his baseline statistics. But it's a risky pick. And, you know, more than anything, he's someone who I'd feel better off taking in a normal draft at like number 6, 7, 8, 9 than in this draft, potentially taking him at number 1.
Mm-hmm. How about Obi Toppin? So Toppin, to me, I've heard arguments on both sides. And honestly, I hear an argument that he should be top 5. And I'm like, maybe you're right. And then I hear an argument that he should be, you know, 17. And I'm like, maybe you're right. I'm trying to find the balance of how Obi Toppin stacks up. And I put out a stat on Twitter the other day, and I got a lot of attention for it. And if you look at the 22-year-olds who've been taken in the lottery over the last, like, 13 years, it's the track record is hideous. It's crazy. It's like all the busts that you can think of were 22 before they were drafted. And so I don't know if you really factor that into the equation. He's kind of different than a lot of guys on that list. He is 22. He's certainly old for his class. Obviously explosive and super productive and efficient in college. There's a little bit of doubt. Where are you on Toppin?
I'm probably lower on him than the consensus. I thought he was the best player in college basketball this year, 99th percentile in terms of points per possession on synergy. Just an automatic finisher inside, I think. You know, a lot of that credit goes to Anthony Grant there, the Dayton head coach, who NBA teams, I think, should be keeping an eye on. He had a pretty good supporting cast there with the Flyers, too. Great college player. I would probably not take him in the top 10. I just think that, you know, the value of what he's going to give you offensively, unless he turns into a really great shooter, is not going to outweigh what I think his shortcomings are defensively. And whenever I see a prospect like that, I'm like, well, can he defend enough to play the 5? Probably not. And then if you move him to 4, that position has mostly become defined by, like, oversized wings in the NBA. So I don't really think that's his game. To me, he just isn't a great fit for the way the league is currently moving. If he would have came out in 2000, I would be a lot higher on him. These days, I think you need a player with a little bit more complete skill set. So I'm on the lower end of the projections for Toppin, I would say.
Yeah, after listening to that, I'm back on the low end as well. It's funny. Of course, a big guy who can't defend, he better be a shooter. I mean, the shooting better be legitimate. And as much improvement as he made this year, the misses were really scary. I mean, he had a lot of air balls, a lot of shots that weren't close, which makes me question the legitimacy of his improved 39% three ball. And I think people kind of sometimes, like, he looks so much like Amari Stoudemire, both, you know, physically and the number one. And I think it kind of like clouds our evaluation on him. And we get so excited with the athleticism and some of the moves that we forget, like you said, about his fit. Like, a lot of power forward. He's going to have a tough time playing center. I actually watched the Kansas game against Azubuike, and he just like really didn't have a chance in some possessions. And so you put him as a four, and like if he goes up against a team who's playing a small ball four or like a, you know, two wings, you're in trouble. And so it's hard to imagine him being a star in today's league. And of course the highlights are so you know, appealing, and they're fun to watch. But I'm just, you know, when I look deep down, it's just really hard to picture him translating all this production into stardom at the NBA level. And he's really going to need a right fit. I think he's going to need a rim protector at the five next to him, and he's going to need a good wing defender on the wing. And if you look at the lottery teams, there are not many who can kind of give him both of those type of defenders. Another guy who's people are kind of split on, Cole Anthony. And I had Cole Anthony maybe top three or top four to start the year. I've seen some boards out there where he's suddenly mid first round. I don't want to, you know, it's kind of like Cam Reddish last year. Like, you just look past the bad situation for him in college and, you know, evaluate him based on high school and the long term? Or do you put stock into the struggles Cole Anthony had, where he's under 40% and didn't really have much of an assist to turnover ratio of 4 to 3.5?
Yeah, great comparison with Cam. Both those guys were much more productive, I think, in high school than they were in college. Cam had a pretty decent rookie year, I think, for Atlanta, and I still think Cam has a pretty bright future. He ended up in a good situation there playing next to Trae Young. So I think I want to buy on Cole. I'm not totally out on him by any means. I would have a tough time picking between, like, him and Maxey. Like, I think that he still has some shake to his game that a lot of these other prospects don't have. And I think that his game might be more tailor-made for the NBA than the college level, whereas someone like Toppin's game was more tailor-made for the college level. So I would probably be willing to bet on Cole. It's a risky bet, certainly. I think that, you know, I wouldn't have a ton of confidence in picking him, but I would pick him because based on some of the other guys he's competing against, I just think his game translates better to the league than a lot of the other prospects in this class. His ability to score off the pick and roll, I think, is going to be big for him. I still believe in his shooting ability, both off the dribble and off the catch. And I think as a team defender, he can be pretty smart and active in terms of, like, the hard hedge, the dig to, you know, attack a man with the ball in the paint, his ability to rebound on a team level, his help rotations. I think all those are pretty solid. I like his approach to the game mentally. And with me, the question with him has always been, like, he can get you 30 points, but is he going to take 25 shots to do it? Mm-hmm. I think in the NBA, he just won't have that kind of latitude in terms of how much rope he has to hold offensive possessions hostage. And in a more narrow role, I still think he can be pretty good. And, you know, if you want a guy who can create his own shot off the dribble, there's not many guys who are a better bet in this class than Cole Anthony. While he might be a little inefficient, I would still be willing to take a chance on Cole Anthony in the top 10.
Yeah, no, me too. And, you know, if a team like the Knicks has the sixth pick, and depending on who's left, I don't know how great of a fit he is for Chicago. He's another score-first guard, but for a team like the Knicks who are looking for a point guard to build around, I'd still give them the green light to take a guy like Cole. I think he's a better passer than the numbers suggest. North Carolina ranked like 360 in the country in three-point percentage, so a lot of missed assist opportunities for him. Yeah, I'm buying the shot creation, I'm buying the shot making, good athlete, made some big-time defensive plays off the ball, like you mentioned, and man, he loves basketball. There's no doubt about that. And going back to just seeing him grow, of course, he's been in the spotlight for a long time with his father, Greg. So, you know, we've been able to see him grow both on and off the floor, and loves the game. I'm just betting on him getting better and being coachable at the next level. And so I think he, just like Reddish, was like a good buy low opportunity at 10. Like if Cole slips, I mean, I think you're getting a steal in this draft. Let's close out with, and this is kind of open-ended, but Chicago has, what, the 45th? I think they have a mid-second round pick this year. Anybody come to mind who you might think could be like a steal this late? First of all, I think the draft process in general, because a lot of these guys who are second round guys and not going to be able to work out for teams, there could be a lot of steals this year because of just teams not knowing enough. Anybody come to mind as somebody to target in the second round?
Yeah, I do think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for guys, even in the, you know, mid to late first round, in terms of dudes who could be pretty good. You know, just going over some guys who I think might be high floor picks. Killian Tilly is someone who's always intrigued me at Gonzaga. I think that, you know, he was on pace to be a first-round pick after his sophomore year, had a lot of injury issues at Gonzaga. If Tilly can stay healthy, I really think Tilly can be a good NBA player as sort of the prototype what you want in a modern-day four. If he's available in the second round at that pick, I would be in favor of the Bulls taking him. Someone like Devin Dotson really intrigues me. I have Dotson as a first-round pick, no doubt, but he was awesome this year at Kansas. He actually grew up in Chicago. Most people don't know that. He moved to the Charlotte area right before he started high school, I think. So if the Bulls were to get him, that'd be a nice homecoming story. I think Dotson's a monster in terms of his ability to get to the rim, to absorb contact, to finish. He's small. He's not the best shooter, but I love the intangibles about Dotson. And I love the speed. I love the physicality. So I would buy on him. I'm into Malachi Flynn for San Diego State, one of the most productive players in the country this year as a transfer from Washington State. Tough, gritty, fits with everything the Bulls typically value in prospects before they had the regime change. Super productive for San Diego State this year, too. So that would be another name I would keep an eye on. You could really go down the list. I think that there's a number of intriguing players. Like, where does Tyler Bay go from Colorado? Mm-hmm. He was awesome defensively this year, one of the better defensive players in the country. I'd keep my eye on him. There's a lot of guys. I don't really have like one name in particular in mind, but even like Elijah Hughes from Syracuse, who's a big wing who could shoot it. If he's available at 45, I'd be down with him. There's definitely some options. Paul Reed, I have to mention. I think he could be a first-round pick potentially, but if he's still there at 45, he could give you most of the traits you're looking for in a modern big man. So, yeah, like you said, there's going to be a lot of potential sleepers this year. It'll be interesting to see how many of these guys keep their name in the draft. Someone like Tyrell Terry entering the draft surprised me a little bit. I'm fascinated to see where he ends up going. Is he a first round pick? Did he get a promise from someone to declare? I think that those are all interesting factors. So a lot of good options potentially at that pick for the Bulls.
Yeah, you named a lot of the guys that were in my mind when I came up with this question, and a few more. Xavier Tillman from Michigan State just screams pro and role player to me, and the fact that he doesn't have much upside suggests to me that he's not going first round. Skylar Mays, LSU, Grant Riller, Charleston. I love Malachi Flynn. And Tyrell Terry, it's a good point. Like, it's possible that a team reached out to his camp and said, leave now because we're going to take you in the first round. I don't know where Trey Jones is going to go. I know some people think of him as a second rounder. I know some people think of him as a lottery pick. I think he's closer. I think he's Dotson also in that same category as Trey Jones. You know, we don't think about this draft in terms of, oh, there's so many obvious stars, but man, some of these guys we're mentioning right now, including Tyler Bay, who also I have as a first rounder and don't expect him to go first round. I mean, there could be a lot of good role players taken late in this draft, particularly without a pre-draft process. I think a lot of guys are going to fall through the cracks. Anything you want to plug? Oh yeah, I see you have a new article out. Check out Ricky's article on the new Bulls plan and their new hire. Anything else you got going on?
Yeah, going to be rolling out a lot of draft coverage. I guess we got no live basketball to watch, so I'm just trying my best, man, to come up with daily stuff for SBNation.com. Going to be rolling out a lot of draft coverage. You can read my LaMelo profile. You can take issue with that if you want to, with me having a number one overall. Wrote about the Bulls today at SBNation.com on the new front office regime. So, yeah, keep it locked to the NBA page, the college basketball page. I'm going to still be churning out the articles while the quarantine's in place.
All right, sounds good. Everybody stay safe. Thanks a lot to Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation, and we'll be back next week.